Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LeDuc. Hurry Kondabolu is a Brooklyn-based comedian and writer who the New York Times praises as one of the most exciting political comics in stand-up today.
I talk about race a lot in my act, which I know makes a lot of white people uncomfortable. Actually, you know what? It's not even the discussion of race that makes white people uncomfortable. It's just me using the phrase white people. I don't think white people are used to being named like the rest of us, I think. Because I'm sure there's somebody in here, it's like, oh, he's saying white people, is he talking about me? He's saying white people, so he must be talking about me. If you think I'm talking about you, then yeah, I'm definitely talking about you. Absolutely. Absolutely. Because the cool white people in this room and the people of color know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about white people. I'm not talking about white people. Oh, yeah, you get it.
He's the co-host of the podcast Politically Reactive with friend and fellow comedian W. Kamau Bell. His new documentary, The Problem with Apu, will premiere on True TV on November 19th, and he'll perform at the Iron Horse Music Hall in Northampton, Massachusetts on Saturday, November 4th. Hurry, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you for having me.
So are you finding there's anything to talk about on stage nowadays?
It's been pretty slow. there hasn't really been much going on. Everything seems in order. At no point during my day do I think, oh, the world's going to end. But pretty much everything's been great.
And as a minority American, that there's nothing new, scary happening around that either.
This is probably the best era to be a person of color in America. I can't imagine another era, even within the last, let's say, 2 years, that is better than this one. No, it's been very scary. It's a really weird time in America, and there's instability, it feels like, in almost every institution. And as a traveling performer, knowing that the current president has activated a certain part of America and a certain kind of attitude, again, racist. I'm saying racist. I'm trying to be diplomatic, and you can't because it's racist.
No, yeah, so you don't have to be.
I don't need to be diplomatic here. I mean, it's worrisome. It makes me frustrated because I felt we were really going in another direction as a country. And, you know, creatively, it hasn't really affected it, which is strange, because I feel like if anything, Trump just makes my point. Like if I'm trying to talk about racism or injustice and all the things I generally talk about on stage, before there needed to be more examples. And now it's like, well, the president said this and there's a joke. So it makes, comedically, it has proven to be beneficial in terms of introducing topics. But outside of that, there's nothing.
How do you process the information to make it funny?
I feel like some of it is innate, and some of it's certainly growing up in a funny household with a funny mom. Growing up in the East Coast, I think, tends to, you know, I grew up in a snapping culture where friends were going back and forth constantly. So some of it's like kind of natural. But I mean, generally, you look for inconsistency. You look for things that clearly, like, don't make sense when compared to other things that are analogous. Stand-ups, like, we make inferences, and unlike like researchers or professors or anything else, like, we don't have hard data necessarily, which is sometimes useful because hard data, one, it can be really boring, but also it doesn't, you know, I think because there's a looseness in the ideas, we get to play, we get to be, there's a lot of license. And so, I mean, I think that's a lot of what it is. But, you know, it's hard to explain how something becomes funny. Like, and then to be honest, I don't always know. I mean, that's why I go up there and that's the thing I think is hilarious. All of a sudden, no one is laughing. And then I revisit it maybe 6 months later and I change the wording like slightly. I add the word the, and all of a sudden it's my best joke. So, I mean, it makes little to no sense. I've been doing this since I was 17 years old, more than half my life, and I have no idea how it works.
You mentioned travel. Are there places that you won't go right now, or is it not, you're not, you know, not not letting them win in that way, I guess?
I mean, generally, I'm gonna perform where I get work, you know? I'm not going to let this restrict what I do, right? Like, I believe in the freedom of speech. I believe in the importance of being able to share my ideas and to make people laugh. The catharsis I get from performing is incredible. And I know that catharsis is reciprocated. I know there are people who also not only find it funny, but find it, you know, like a relief, and a deeper connection. And so I'm not going to let anything stop me. I mean, if I was asked to perform at a Klan rally, I would think, first of all, how did they get my information? And secondly, is this a trap?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's certain places I'm not going to perform. But, like, for the most part, I don't, you know, I feel like I can't let this slow me down. There's too much to say. There's too much to do. We can't let this slow us down.
You are a writer, recently a filmmaker, and a podcaster. In addition to being a stand-up comic, is stand-up your first love, the main thing you still like to do the most?
You know, I was opening for Chris Rock in Europe a couple of weeks ago, and it's funny because he, you know, produces shows and he makes films, but at the end of the day, it all comes down to stand-up. It all comes down to, will this lead to people coming to see me perform? And I really do believe that. It's not to say that I don't like documentary filmmaking. Like, I just made a film called The Problem with Apu. It's not to say that documentary filmmaking isn't something I find interesting on its own. And it's not to say that doing podcasting or radio isn't fascinating. And it is. I love all those things as their own disciplines, right? I appreciate what they are. And I'm really loving learning about how this works, right? The process of learning a new craft is so exciting. But at the end of the day, nothing is freer to me than stand-up comedy. Low production values, a human being connecting with other human beings. I mean, in an era where everything requires, like, huge graphics and attention spans are short and, you know, people seem like they've seen everything, like, the idea that a human connecting with other humans in the simplest of ways and the most direct of ways is still really exciting to me. And it almost feels, it feels shocking that we still do it. And I'm excited that it's still around and it's my favorite thing.
The Problem with Apu, your film you just mentioned, premieres on True TV on November 19th, Sunday, November 19th. Tell us about, I was sent a screener, I have seen it, but I don't want to tell anything that you're not telling in advance of people seeing it. So tell us about The Problem with Apu.
Well, Apu is the Quickie Mart owner on The Simpsons, the Indian Quickie Mart owner. And when I was growing up in the 80s and 90s, it was the only character we had. Primarily in the 90s. It was the only character Indians and Indian Americans had on American television and in film. Like, it was a cartoon character who was stereotypical, voiced by a white dude, you know, voiced by Hank Azaria. And so there's a lot that happens when you are so restricted, when you have such few images. I mean, it certainly affects how you view yourself and how you view your culture. There's certainly a sense of shame to some degree, like clearly, like, we're not valued and clearly we're a punchline. And also whenever a group has a limited number of images, I think that's dangerous. You know, I think about post 9/11, the fact that, like, post 9/11, you know, you had all this anti-Muslim and anti, like, brown people hate crimes. And I think to myself, well, let's see, the two images America has at this point of most brown people are Apu from The Simpsons, and one of the most legendary shows of all time, and terrorists. And when something like that happens, like 9/11, what side are people going to err on? And that's what, you know, when you have a full range of depictions, that would be absurd. Well, no, it's not one or the other. There's so many different types of brown people. There's so many different people from all over the world, and you have a fuller image. And that's not something we got in that era. So the film is really about, like, the impact that a cartoon character, as silly as that is, can have, as well as, like, the importance of imagery, the history of minstrelsy in this country, and the legacy that this kind of keeps going. My love of The Simpsons is covered, as well as, you know, where we go from here. I mean, this is a small thing, you know what I mean? Like, The Simpsons, it's a small example to bring up a bigger story of minority representation.
Well, you also make the point in the movie that there are more representations of Indian or South Asians on TV, but it's like 14 people and you personally know all of them.
It honestly feels like I do. Right. It's not completely true, but it does feel like we're all a degree away from each other. I mean, there still aren't that many South Asian Americans in the public eye and especially in the field of entertainment, but you know, it's getting better, and I also see a generation that, like, has been influenced by, like, you know, the first, like, when I was starting to do stand-up, it was, like, me. Like, the people who broke out initially were, like, Aziz, me. Russell Peters was already there. He was a big international star. Then Kumail. Like, there was a handful of us. And Mindy, of course, like, through writing and sketch and the shows. Mm-hmm. But, like, there weren't that many of us. And we were that first wave, really, of doing stand-up, which is really, like I was saying, is the most direct way to express yourself and doesn't force you to read someone else's words and have to fulfill someone else's interpretation of your culture. Like, when you're doing stand-up, you do what you want to do. It kind of forces the issue. And so, you know, we were trying to create something that didn't exist, and now you have a generation of kids who grew up watching us, which is really funny because I'm only 35, but change happens like quickly. Mm-hmm. And now you have this other wave of kids who are actually performing and creating things, and they don't feel like it's as strange as it used to be. They have examples, they have role models, and that's really exciting.
Hari Kondabolu will perform at the Iron Horse Music Hall in Northampton, Massachusetts on Saturday, November 4th. His documentary, The Problem with Apu, premieres on True TV on November 19th. Links to more information will be posted along with this interview at wamc.org/roundtable. Hari, I'm a big fan, and I really appreciate your taking the time to speak with me today.
Oh, I'm so excited to perform in Northampton. I've wanted to do this for a really long time, so I'm really excited it's finally happening.
Once again, Hari Kondabolu will perform at the Iron Horse Music Hall on November 4th. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
It's the winter. I hate the winter because I don't really do well with cold. The only season I hate more than the winter, of course, is the summer. For personal reasons, because I have a lot of white friends, and I'm sick of them talking about tanning. I gotta get an even tan. I gotta avoid tan lines. I'm not offended by this. I just have nothing to add to that conversation. I don't have your freak mutant ability to change colors. You're like the shittiest X-Men ever.